Call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Forum is present. First order of business is the approval of minutes from April 7th. Chair would entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Representative Falk moves approval of the minutes from April 7th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. First bill on the agenda is House File 3033. Representative Rukavina.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, I have a delete all amendment, the DE1 amendment.
We do have that distributed, Representative Rukavina. First, I need to move that House File 3033 be recommended to pass and be returned to the Committee on Finance. So that we have that motion before us, and then I will additionally move adoption of the H3033DE1 amendment. That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Rukavina, I believe that puts the bill in the order that you wanted to have it.
Well, thank you, Mr.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if you recall, we were here earlier this session with the bill, and there were some questions about it. And the language that we just adopted in the DE1 amendment takes care of some of those concerns, and I think, Mr. Chair, that you were at a meeting with some of the stakeholders where Xcel Energy had concerns and some of the other producers of photovoltaic panels had questions on the bill as it was previously introduced. So basically, that's what this bill does. And in the last page, Mr. Chair, the appropriations have changed from where they were in the original bill and been lowered to $2 million from $5 million in fiscal year 2011 and from $5 million to $4 million in 2012 before it ramps up. So those are the changes in the bill, Mr. Chair. And again, my goal was to try to utilize some of the money that we had from the Prairie Island Agreement when we started these renewable energy funds to actually try to put things out there that where I can keep with my goal of making things in this country, and we could reduce our dependence on oil and other fossil fuels. And that's what I'm trying to do with this bill. So I'd appreciate your support.
Any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gavina, the cost of using this electricity for the individual homeowner or business? Is there a good price on this?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I mean, it's up to this is to try to get homeowners to take advantage of both federal tax breaks and then these state grants that would, make the decision, I suppose, whether they're going to use it directly in their homes or put it back in the grid. But the price of it, I suppose, is more than the price of fossil fuels. I have Gary Cervenic here, who's been helping me on the bill. Maybe he knows some other facts that I don't, but I believe the last time we were here, that question was asked, and there was a calculation by a gentleman that was testifying on behalf of my bill from California, Mr. John Carroll. And I don't know, Mr. Cervenic, if you remember those numbers at all.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Cirkvenek.
My name is Gary Cirkvenek, representing the Mountain Iron Economic Development Authority. And after the last hearing, John Carroll, representing the manufacturer, Mr. Chairman, Representative, sent you a note with a revised calculation in it, which I believe was 15 cents per kilowatt hour based upon all the rebates available. But I think the larger issue is an average homeowner who would be installing a typical sized PV system in their house could achieve with this rebate in the XL service area if they use the Minnesota manufactured panel a payback period of under 6 years, and that was the goal of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Gavina, the payback is, if it is 6 years, what does the price, does it stay, or has it gone lower than after that, or is it, where does it level off at?
Mr. Chair, I don't really know that, but again, the goal here is to, Representative Anderson, is to get people to install these photovoltaic panels on their homes, taking advantage of federal and rebates and state grants so that we can reduce our fossil fuel consumption. And eventually, I don't know, I mean, the payback is what we're after here, to reduce that so people will take advantage of these incentives. I don't think that the goal is to have cheap energy, because renewable energy is not sometimes as cheap as coal or other fossil fuels. So I don't know if Mr. Bank has any more to add to that.
Mr. Sickbank.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think the issue is if somebody installs this system on their home, they would get paid back for the excess electricity that they produce at the same rate they're buying it from the host utility, in this case XL Energy. So the price is exactly what they would be paying for buying it from XL, because this is money in the XL service area. So it would only be the same as whatever the rate is XL is charging.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
The use of these type of renewable energy, have there been studies done or surveys done to show it being used other places that, and who uses it, who will be using it most? Will it be the homeowner? Will it be a commercial industry, small business, big business? Who's going to be using and utilizing these the most?
Mr. Chairman, the bill provides anybody to be eligible, a small business, a commercial business, a homeowner, with an installation maximum of 100 kW.
Representative Wells. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Rukavina, what is the maximum amount a person would be able to get under this? If you max out at 100 kilowatts, I'm just trying to figure this out by what you have in your bill, if it's $500,000 that a person could qualify for, or what is the dollar amount?
No, I don't. Mr. Chair, I don't believe it's that high because of the size of the, but do you know the answer to that, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is a calculation not to exceed $5 of all total rebates available, and if because this is for the XL service area only. The XL service area rebate, I believe, is around $2.34 per kW. There's an existing state rebate that they could become eligible for if that is not empty, and this fills the gap between $5 and $2.34, or a little bit above that. And then you multiply that times 100 kW, which would be the answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welch, page 2 on that lines 2.24 to 2.34, or I think actually subdivision B in there is where their language to limit to the amount that would be paid back on the rebate, and I think that was agreed to by all the parties working on it, including XL energy. But I don't know what the actual dollar amount is, Representative Welty. Figure it out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina. I guess I would be more comfortable if you could give us a dollar amount that under your bill would be the maximum amount of subsidy a person would receive to do solar at the maximum of 100 kilowatts. So I would like to be clear on what this actually says. I mean, I'm trying to figure it out by how you have it written here, but it still is a little unclear. So if somebody could give me the maximum amount of a rebate, that would be great.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, maybe Mr. Eloff can help figure out, since he, I believe, wrote the amendment, so he might be able to help us with that dollar amount.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, Representative Welty, could you repeat the number that you're looking for again, please?
Representative Welty. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Eloff, what I'm looking at is, so if somebody has a project of 100 kilowatts, what is the maximum rebate that they're going to get under this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, I think this is one of those instances that the answer is not enough information to be able to tell, because we don't know, since the limit on line 2.30 is 60% of the installed cost, that's the number that we don't know, which is effectively sets the cap. But as I understand the way the program works, the other rebates, the federal tax credit, and possibly the other state rebate that the Department of Commerce currently has, would be subtracted from the $5 per watt. My understanding is that the state rebate from the Department of Commerce is about 2.25, I believe, per watt, and I'm not sure what the federal tax credit amounts to now. So we're down to about $2 or under, I think, per watt installed, and a maximum of 100 kilowatts.
That's a million.
Do the math here. 200,000. But again, that 60% figure is going to be the key, and we need to know what the installed cost of the system would be.
Yes, directly to this point, I think the doing a multivariable analysis to Representative Welty's concerns, the one variable that I don't have my head fully wrapped around is the kind of the industry norm installed per watt cost. And I don't know if Mr. Chair, I know that you've had personal experience in the recent past. If you could help us, I know that I've seen systems now that are $1, $1.50 per watt panel, but I don't think that includes the inverter and the other components that you need. So I don't know if you could help us understand what that cost of per watt norm is these days.
Representative Kalin, I think that Mr. Eloff's observations are essentially correct. I think that he's right about the current state rebate per watt. And it does depend on the cost of the installation. I found in my case that the state and the utility rebates plus the federal tax credit covered about a third of the cost of the installation. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, you have been a big supporter of Made in America products over time. And I notice now this is strictly made in Minnesota under this language. I guess the question I have I'm not familiar with who or how many manufacturers we have in Minnesota already that do this. Do we have any?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Nornis, we do have a, I think actually a small organization of companies that do this. I know that they have now seen this language as it's been in the submitted in the DE1 amendment here, and that they're okay with it. If you recall, there were some questions by one of those manufacturing companies on the last bill that they weren't sure if they would qualify or not, but my understanding is that they've all come to the table and they're okay with it. The actual number of manufacturers, I don't know where that is, but I do know there are several enough that they do have a statewide organization.
My concern, Mr. Chair, that we would narrow it and fence out other manufacturers somewhere in this country that maybe just for competition reasons would be left out, would not be a part of this. And actually, they are being left out, you know, so it's strictly, I don't have an argument with that. I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Nornis, is the fact that we're using state money from the Renewable Development Fund to, you know, entice people to make this investment, that we thought, you know, that this was drafted so that it was legitimate, that there weren't any, you know, federal rules being broken or anything else as far as interstate commerce, and that this grant program would be legitimate, and it's aimed at Minnesota residents who are using Minnesota product because of the Renewable Development Fund, which basically Xcel Energy is paying for out of the old 1995 or whatever it was, Prairie Island mandate.
Mr. Chair, another question. As a result of this, will there be any increased cost to the ratepayers for Xcel Energy?
Mr. Chair, not because of this bill. Maybe with some upcoming benefits, I don't know, but not because of this. No.
Yeah. Well, just one final comment. I guess I don't have a problem with this. I think, you know, if someone wants to do it, fine. If they can afford it, fine. I do know that base load is still going to be an issue that we have to deal with in Minnesota, and the renewable energy is not the total answer to that. And so, you know, I can see it being a part of it. We still have to deal with that in the near future. So.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Nornis, I don't disagree with you at all. I'm no expert in this area, but I do know that, you know, Governor Pelini and others negotiated the 25 and 20 or whatever that mandate is, and the governor was supportive of it, and I think a number of Republicans and most Democrats were, and this is just a way to try to meet that using money that's already available.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to commend Representative Rukavina for the work on this issue, and I do think it's a good program. And I was just looking at how you defined it to only Xcel service area, but then upon checking 116C.779. But I do think that this would be a program that we'd like to see maybe not just exclusive to one utility service area, but maybe the whole state. I think that there is benefit there. Now, there might be some issues with RDF and whether or not Xcel ratepayers or not should be paying for projects outside of Xcel's territory. But I'd be happy and willing to make the argument that anybody within the MISO area is bearing some of these costs, and as a result, anybody in any service area in Minnesota would likely be paying some of these costs. And I think that that's maybe one of the things I'd like to have seen would have this program been more statewide.
Mr. Chair, I would like to see that too, Representative Paul. But, you know, we had questions from this committee when I was here last time about the ratepayers from the Xcel area, and I believe in the Senate, Senator Alan Anderson had those same concerns, and so they tried to, over there, they worked with Xcel and some of the stakeholders that I said to Representative Nornis, and this is the compromise they came up with. But, you know, we got to use the money that's available right now. There's no new money around here, at least for the time being, and so that's the compromise they came up with. You and I would both like to see it everywhere in the state.
Mr. Chair. follow-up comment. I just can't help myself. Representative Rukavina, you've been here a few years longer than I have, but one of the things that I'm starting to pick up on...
I've been here a few years longer than you've been alive. So,
point taken.
Okay, clear.
But it was, I was under the impression we didn't refer to the other body in committee, so...
Well, we always do. Usually not as nicely as I just did, but
yeah.
This is the new me, so...
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I've got a line of questions here, so just fasten your seatbelt, if you will. What is left in the RDF fund to pay for this in the first place? Are you aware of how much is left? Because we've been robbing this fund for balancing the budget for the last few years, and... is there even this much left, and if not, if there is, what's left after this?
Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, before you answer that, Representative Westrom, I don't believe that actually we have used the renewable development fund to balance the budget at all. I'm not, if you're aware of something that I'm not, I think you should tell us what that is, but...
Mr. Chair, I'll go back and do some research, but I think there's programs that used to be paid out of the general fund that are now paid by the RDF. I'll double-check that. Unless none of them passed, I believe that's what's happened. It's still going to renewable energy, but it used to be general fund expenditures that the RDF ended up kicking in to pay for. But are you saying they didn't happen?
No, I was thinking you were suggesting that this was the other way around, that money from the Renewable Development Fund went directly into the general fund. I know that has not happened.
Mr.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Representative
Mr. Chair, if you dump it directly in the general fund or you supplant what the general fund used to pay for, it's six, one, half a dozen, the other, but that's what I was referring to. But my concern is there any money left in the RDF fund, or how much is discretionary? I'm just not sure offhand. Do you know Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, all I know, Representative Westrom, is that there's approximately $16 million a year going into this, and that Excel had assured me that there was money still to pay for this as it's written, so that's why we lowered those numbers from the last bill to $2 million the first year and $4 million when we had $5 million in those fiscal years for an appropriation for this program. I think you and I both agree, Representative Westrom, that we'd like to see things done besides thinking about seeing things done, and that's what this bill is attempting to do.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, when we first set the RDF fund up, it used to go to research some projects as well to help develop new technologies and things. I'm starting to think there's hardly any of that money left. And I'm not necessarily opposed to directing it to certain areas. I'm just thinking... There won't be any need for the RDF board, and maybe they don't even meet anymore. I imagine there's just a little bit left. Maybe they could comment on that. Excel probably knows offhand what is not committed of that RDF fund. But Representative Rukavina, your amendment is now restricting it to just an Excel territory. Why are you depriving my constituents of renewable development opportunity in your language? I don't think that's probably what you intended, is it?
Well, Mr. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, because I got beat up so bad by this committee the last time I was here at the bill that I changed it to meet some of the thrashing that I got. There are other programs, I understand, for incentives like Minnesota Power Service Area, or maybe in your case, Otter Tail Power. I don't know how those programs work or what those rebates are. I think they're there, but this was on top of that to make it more attractive, and it initially started out as a statewide bill, but I got pounded in here, so I just pulled in and restricted it to the XL service area, and maybe someday we can expand it if Minnesota Power and Otter Tail and Great River Energy and everybody else put money into the pot to offer the incentives for this. But maybe the gentleman from XL can answer your direct question about what's left. But he probably knows the answer. They probably watch that money closer than I do. And I won't even bother to get into you about a debate where Representative Russell about the funds that have been raided, not by us, but by others. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, are all the other programs out of the RDF restricted to just Excel territories? Do you know that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not an expert on the Renewable Development Fund and what. I just know some of the projects that have been funded that look at a larger scope of what we can do to renew.
I'll give you the short answer, Representative Rukavina. No would be the right answer to that question. and Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, my point is we haven't restricted on the others. When we set this fund up, the state of Minnesota had borders the same as it does today, and the idea was the whole state should benefit from renewable energy developed. That was part of the agreement with the cask storage in the state, and a balance in the state having some interest in developing a future cleaner energies potentially, although one might argue that nuclear is as clean as we get. But that was the idea. It wasn't to just make sure Minneapolis got the renewable energies or Excel service territories. And so I'm a little puzzled why we would just limit it to that, because I don't happen to represent any area that Excel has a service territory in. Most of Western Minnesota wouldn't be in that case, with a few exceptions. Yet we are often sometimes a good place for some of the renewable projects for a variety of reasons, whether there's some available transmission line that haven't been used, or in wind projects, typically they don't want them on top of the IDS tower, and so I'm a little baffled, and I'm. Maybe you have an answer, or maybe Mr. Evans does.
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair, Rick Evans with XL Energy. I came up here to answer one question, and I've got three or four more. if I miss one, I apologize. Just to give you an idea of the status of the fund, the payments in the fund to the fund currently are $19,500,000 a year. $16 million sort of earmarked from the Prairie Island dry cask storage, and the balance from the Monticello dry cask storage. That number will go up in state fiscal year 2013. That number will be $23 million, and that's because the per cask fee that we pay at Monticello will go up as we add additional casks at that facility. Currently, what the committee that runs the fund is looking at is prior to this bill that there would be $15 million that they could do what they call their cycle four grants. They've made grants on three cycles. They would be putting out an RFP soliciting more grant proposals, and they would have $15 million to make those grants in what would be state fiscal year 2011. So there is enough money to cover the costs of this bill. However, it would reduce the amount of money that the fund would have available to make grants. So that $15 million would be going down. But as far as the money that's currently been allocated or committed to the U of M IRE program, to the REPI payments, and the administrative costs of the fund, there would still be sufficient money to fund this program described in this bill with a very modest amount left over. And I think it would be a debate, frankly, for the committee that runs the fund whether there would be sufficient money at the end of this to justify another round of grants in 20,
in 2010. My guess is that they would say no, that they would have to wait until it built up again to be sufficient to do another cycle of grants. So that's the status of the fund. I guess what I would say about restricting it to XL service territory, which is something that we asked the proponents of the bill to include, all of that $19,500,000 that's currently collected into the fund comes from XL ratepayers. XL, as you know, thanks to some of the work done in this committee last year, has launched its solar rewards program, which is granting subsidies for rooftop solar to our customers. This would supplement that. And I guess what I would say is that, you know, since this fund was created, whatever the intent was back then, certainly we're living in a different universe today. And this would be our concern. We have a renewable energy standard, which is quite aggressive. We have conservation standards, which are quite aggressive, which we're trying to meet, and which rooftop solar helps us meet. And our concern is that if our ratepayers are making this contribution to the Renewable Development Fund, that our utility and our customers should get the benefits of the conservation that's going to be achieved and the renewable energy that's going to be achieved, so it can work towards the goals that you've set for us. And so that's the reason for restricting it. I guess the other thing I would say is that, subject to some of my colleagues telling me I'm incorrect, we are the first utility in the state with a solar program, the solar rewards program, and under this bill, customers would be required to apply for that. So even if not as a legal matter, as a practical matter, we're the place you have to go to get these rebates or to get the subsidy for your solar. So XL Energy feels pretty strongly about trying to keep this money in our service territory because it's coming from our customers.
Chair, Mr. Evans, so what you're acknowledging that at least is a departure from how the fund has traditionally been administered. I'm just sitting here thinking out loud. I mean, if somebody in Alexandria put a solar voltaic system on their property, is there anything that restricts them from selling that to you as power in the system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I guess they'd have to have a power purchase agreement with us to sell us that power, but sort of theoretically nothing restricts them. I find it a little hard to believe that anyone would build one large enough that we'd be interested, but it's possible.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess that's I'm not comfortable restricting this necessarily to just the XL territory. Maybe there's language that XL gets the first option to buy it if it's out of their service territory and it can count towards their RES. But I think to just restrict it to their territory is quite a departure from what the RDF funds have been used for, and I understand Mr. Evans and XL's concern and idea of their customers' money, but it's that's the deal that was made with the cask storage in the first place, and it reminds me of a conversation about 8 years ago or 7 years ago when former Representative Dean Simpson called me, and one of his constituents was trying to apply for funds out of the RDF, and it was implied to him that he wasn't supposed to qualify for them because he wasn't in the XL service territory. And I did the research, and of course we had carried the bill through the committee, and that in fact was the furthest thing from the truth that could exist. And so he was getting a runaround on that project at the time, and so that's what I see potentially happening here. Now, there's a way to work out so you get the first option to buy it. That seems to maybe make sense to me, but Representative Rukavina, I'm wondering if you're willing to work on something like that on this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, as I stated to you several minutes ago, my bill initially had this statewide, but I met resistance in this committee. Representative Beard, who's conveniently sitting down right now, was one of them who raised the issue along with a few others. And so this was the compromise. It was raised over in the Senate, too, and this is a compromise that was reached. You're totally correct in saying that this is a departure, because the three different grant, you know, cycles that have occurred right now have given money to California companies to look at photovoltaic cells, and Michigan companies to look at hydrogen gas production, and so they've given grants all over the country. I don't know what the results of those have been. I'm no expert on this fund at all, but you know, I am kind of an expert on wanting to make things and manufacture things in this country again. And that's what this bill was designed to do, while meeting the requirements of what I think the Renewable Development Fund is, and that is to eventually reach some type of goal where we reduce our fossil fuel consumption and replace it with the renewable energy consumption. And that's what this bill is attempting to do, both on the manufacturing side and on the consumption side. So I'm hoping we can work on this together. If you want to expand it to more of a statewide program, well, you can work with Representative Beard and others, because they're the ones that raised the issues in the first place, that this, if these grants are given to customers, and at that time there were customers all over the state, that they should be given to the Xcel customers who are putting the money into the fund. So that's what we did in taking that recommendation from this committee the first time we were here, and now we've worked things out where I think everyone that had concerns, now except you and you and Representative Falk and others who now have concerns about it being a statewide program, have raised those concerns here in the committee today. But members, I'm not veering from my commitment to try to solve the crisis we're in this country by establishing a manufacturing base again in this country and in this state, and that's what I'm hoping to do with this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll let further discussion go on. I'm contemplating whether we should make an amendment to take that restriction out here, but let others discuss.
Well, Representative Westrom, as long as we're talking about amendments, I think that this would be an appropriate time for me to offer the A1 amendment, which I believe has been distributed. We have Mr. Evans at the as Mr. Evans mentioned a few minutes ago, the arrangement that we have with the Monticello nuclear facility and the cask storage there is based on a per cask basis. The assumption was, I believe, when the legislation was first passed that provided for $16 million annually to for cask storage at Prairie Island, that the assumption was that that did represent a $500,000 per year charge for each cask. It was not anticipated at the time that this would be going on indefinitely, or that there would be an increase in the number of casks from those that had been committed to at that time. And so what this amendment does is simply reflect the current realities and puts the arrangement with Prairie Island on a par with that in Monticello. And I would move adoption of that amendment. Any discussion? Hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to come up to speed here quickly. I had another engagement, walk in here and hear people using my name, hopefully not in vain. I'm sure it wasn't, but... But now I'm seeing the A1 amendment here to the DE amendment, which I understand we adopted. Just to be clear, is it what you're doing with the A1 is taking the $16 million annual number, which I believe is in statute, is that what you just said? And you're making it $500,000 so that it, the per cask, as more casks are stored, as per the authorization we gave them here a couple years ago, that number could grow? All right, thanks. That helps me. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I'd be just interested in hearing from Mr. Evans or Excel. I'm
about to give Mr. Evans an opportunity.
I'm trying to recall back doing the math. There was 32, and are they going up from that now? And I'll wait to hear from him.
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, there currently are 29 casks at Prairie Island, and there will be 29 casks until 2011, and then we would add casks 30, 31, and 32. It's on the current schedule. And then we would be adding three additional casks, I believe, the year after that, and three additional casks the year after that. So that would be we're currently at 29, and we'll be adding three more in 2011. That's the current plan. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you wanted me to expand on the topic a little more. You know, originally when the RDF fund was created, the payment was a per cask fee, and as I recall, it was something like 2003 that it was changed to a flat rate with the idea that we would have a consistent amount. And then when the Monticello dry cask storage was graded, in that instance we went back to a per cask rate. I don't recall what all the discussion was as to why a flat fee was better one year and a per cask fee was better the next year. I know there was some discussion at Monticello, since the casks are smaller, they hold less fuel, that there would be a smaller payment. So the payment on a Monticello cask is, I think, currently $350,000 per year as we add casks out there. You know, from XL's point of view, you know, we don't want to see an increase in the amount that we're paying into the Renewable Development Fund. We think the Renewable Development Fund has provided some good things. It's also been used for things that we don't support and we think were not productive. And we would be very interested in having a longer, broader discussion about what the appropriate use of the Renewable Development Fund might be and what the appropriate way to collect that money might be. Frankly, you know, I don't think today we're going to have time to have that discussion. But I shouldn't say arbitrarily, because it's not arbitrary, but at this point, to propose this kind of an increase in the fund without stopping to think about how we're spending the money and what the use of that money is for, and frankly why XL customers should continue to pay increased amounts into the fund is all legitimate questions that are going to take a little more time than I guess I had this morning to prepare for this hearing.
Mr. Chair, that helped jog my memory a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Evans. As I recall, it was 03 when we did this. Mr. Evans, you were right with your timing. We weren't at 32 casks at the time, and $16 million was the derived number for Prairie Island. If we wanted to do that and follow $500,000 a cask, I mean, theoretically, we'd go back and say, you know, that they've overpaid X amount because they aren't even to 32 yet, as we've heard. It does seem to me that this is a bigger policy question and discussion than to add it on to this bill. I think we should have a bigger discussion, Mr. Chair, than then go back and just add it, because I think at the time the idea was we'll set a lump amount. There was also, I believe, a $20 million payment that was made, some up front and some over a little time, to a hydrogen research project at the University of Minnesota as part of the deal of keeping casks stored in Minnesota and near the Prairie Island plant. So I do think this would be a significant deviation from what was already in place and why we went to the $16 million payment in the first place, which has represented greater than $500,000. But the days that it would represent $500,000 or slightly less going into the future seem like they haven't come yet, and we'd be changing this agreement or changing these terms before they ever would be realized. So I'm not comfortable supporting this at this point in time. I'll wait for other members' comments and discussion, but I appreciate Mr. Evans' recap.
Members, it had been my intention in the amendment, and I did not, due to everything seeming to be drafted at the last minute these days, I did not catch the effective date on this amendment. It had been my intention to have this be a seamless transition from where we are. I did not intend this to take effect until the 32 cask threshold had been met. I would ask Mr. Eloff if he can respond to why draft a revision to the final clause in the amendment. Mr. Eloff, is that possible at this point?
I believe so, Mr. Chair. Page 2, line 9. Delete everything after effective and insert. When 32 dry casks containing spent fuel are located at the Prairie Island nuclear plant, period.
I would incorporate that change to the amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Obermeier.
Thanks. There's just one other technical fix on line 1.3. I think that number 4 there needs to be a number 2.
Mr. Eloff, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Obermeier. We will incorporate that correction as well. Is there further discussion to the amendment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for coming in late. There's many meetings and committees meeting all this morning, all at the same time.
Let me interrupt you about that, Representative Hackbarth. I believe both caucuses have scheduled a caucus meeting before session begins at noon. It's scheduled for, or I think session actually only starts at 12:30 maybe, but I know caucuses are scheduled for 11:30, obviously. We're not going to complete our agenda in the next 3 minutes, so what we will have to do is recess at 11:30 and reconvene immediately after session
I'll hold my comments until later then, Mr. Session, or Mr. Chairman.
Well, if they were relevant to the amendment, Representative Ekberg.
They are. Are you going to vote on the amendment before we recess?
Well, that was my intention.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, this is a huge increase to XL ratepayers. It's a huge increase in the amount of money that they're going to have to pay for their electricity to put this amendment on. Now, I don't know where you buy your electricity from, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know where a lot of people on this committee buy their electricity from. And I don't think Representative Rukavina gets his electricity from XL Energy. But this is a huge increase to ratepayers at XL Energy should we adopt this amendment. I would recommend a no vote on the amendment.
Further discussions? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Watkins. Let me ask, this is a little unrelated, but it is related in the sense of, what is your sense? We've priorly had the discussion about statewide projects and use in the DE1 amendment restricting that now on this new program Representative Rukavina's bill has. Would your intent be that down the road that's the way we should go, is limit the statewide use of this fund, and it does tie into, because this is going to generate a fair amount of new money 5 years down the road for this fund. What are your thoughts when you intermingle those issues?
Well, Representative Westrom pointed out that in current statute, what is specified for the use of the renewable development account is simply development of renewable energy sources. There's been an emphasis in the past, I think, on research that presumably would be focused on that kind of development, but that is not necessarily the only thing we can do to develop renewable energy resources, and I think that the bill that we have before us does fit with the original intent of the legislation. Of course, I would like to see as much support for renewable energy in every form statewide as we can possibly manage. This is a pretty small step in that direction, I think. We don't have any idea, even if the modest amount of funding that's provided for in the Rukavina bill will be taken advantage of by anyone. And if it proves to be something that does have the kind of stimulus that we would hope that it would have, then I think we would have a pretty good argument for trying to promote a similar program statewide.
Mr. Chair, with what funding source? I mean, a state general fund funding source or the RDF funding source?
Well, Representative Westrom, we're getting out in a future that is difficult to predict at this point. I do think that there is a logical connection between the renewable development fund and the way that it was originated and the uses to which it's been put.
Well, Mr. Chair, back to the amendment, I would agree with Representative Hackbarth, and more so to my earlier comments. I just think this is a significant change, a departure from what used to be the $500,000 a cask, but has now been a set number, whether they're above or below that number, and I just think, at this point, I would urge members to vote against it, and think we should have a discussion, a much longer discussion than one we're having today and a month after original committee deadlines.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just said that this was a small step in that direction for renewable energy, etc. Every time you have a bill, Mr. Chairman, it's a small step in that direction. It keeps piling up and piling up and over and over and over again. The last few years that you've had bills that work towards that goal of renewable energy, it cost ratepayers more money, continually costing more money. I don't know if that's your goal, Mr. Chairman, to make electricity so expensive that people can't afford it and they start using less. Maybe that's your a way of motivating people to use less electricity. I'm not sure. But you continue to have more and more bills that are continually costing ratepayers more money. And this is just yet another one, another small step, but on top of all these other bills that you keep bringing forward. I'm very, very concerned about the ratepayer, Mr. Chairman. I think it's time that if this thing passes, I think along with tax increases and not reducing government the way we should be reducing government, this next election is going to tell the story.
Representative Kalin?
Thank you for indulging one quick question of Mr. Evans to this point. What's the total revenue collected from ratepayers by Xcel Energy a year? I don't know. I don't know, and I don't see any help in the room. I don't know. A lot of money. Hundreds of millions, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions. Well, Xcel Energy and all of our service territory, probably billions. Okay, thank you.
There's no further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
To the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
You want to vote on an session?
Well, if we're coming back, it probably doesn't matter. But I just had a question. I wasn't following Representative Kalin's connection to the question and to the amendment, so maybe he could draw a better conclusion for me is what I was wondering.
Well, Representative Western, I don't know that we want to explore that further at this time.
Mr. Chair, I'll let Mr. Evans' response stand for it on its own.
Representative Hackford.
Mr. Chairman, this is a serious issue. I think we need a roll call on this. I want to know how people feel on increasing rates to Xcel payers, taxpayers, or ratepayers.
Roll call have been requested. The clerk will take the roll. Terrible.
Falk?
Aye.
Western?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Atkins? Beard?
No.
Bly?
Aye.
Reinert?
As an Xcel ratepayer, I vote yes.
Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hoppy? Hortman? Johnson?
Yes.
Kalin?
Aye.
Knuth? Kulik Jackson?
Aye.
Magnus?
No.
Nornis?
No.
Obermuller?
Aye.
Purcell?
Aye, from an Xcel right there.
Saylor?
Yes.
Seifert?
No.
Welty?
Yes.
Thank you. There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted, and the committee stands in recess until immediately following session.